Welcome to episode 74 of Industry Misinterpretations with James Robertson, Michael Lucas-Smith, and Dave Buck. This week is part two of our What Can Smalltalk Do podcast, where Michael asked a bunch of leading questions about Smalltalk capabilities, and Dave and I did our best to answer them. If you have feedback on this or any other episode, please send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com, or head on over to iTunes and leave a review, Podcast Alley, and cast a vote for this podcast, or you can visit us in the Industry Misinterpretations group over at Facebook, the Smalltalkers group at NAME.
I know Smalltalk is a dynamic language. Are there optional typing?
At this time, there is no optional typing. I know various people have tried putting in some sort of typing mechanisms. It's not popular. It's not something that Smalltalkers would tend to do.
Yeah, nobody's ever really been interested in. I mean, there have been various efforts to do something, and it's just never caught on because of what you just said. Nobody really, small talkers just tend not to care. They're happy with duck typing.
Now, one thing I find interesting, to play around with, I haven't done a whole lot of work with it. There's something called the Roel typer, R-O-E-L typer, what's the name of the guy who did it?
Roel Woods.
Thank you. He wrote up, and that will infer types for you. So if you take a program, you can run this typer on it, and it'll tell you what it thinks the types of the variables are based on the messages sent to it and the context and so forth. But in general, Smalltalkers find that types aren't a big deal, and we would indicate types more by parameter names than anything. So if you have a parameter called display on colon at colon, the parameters, or a method called that, the parameter would be, or the method heading would say, display on colon a graphics context at colon a point. So it would give us some clues as to what we're supposed to pass into this this method.
Yeah, not only clues, I'd say that for the most part, keyword syntax makes it much more difficult to mix up the order of arguments. I mean, for instance, back when I was a C programmer, if you had a function that took two or three arguments, all of them were integers, it was very easy to just screw up and transpose two of them. Whereas in Smalltalk, using the kind of thing you just mentioned, display on at, it's very difficult to screw up and put the point first.
And in fact, the keyword messages, analogy was posted by Niall Ross, that keyword messages are very similar to what people would write just as a note or a memo.
Yeah.
That it would have multiple parts, and after each part with a colon, there would be some value. Note to colon so-and-so, about colon subject. That's what keyword messages are like.
Yeah, and actually Arden Thomas, our product manager, just brought that up when he was giving his talk at OOP a couple of weeks ago in Germany, and that seemed to be very well received, that particular explanation.
Yeah.
Does Smalltalk come with any kind of security, like ARC4 or Blowfish, that sort of thing?
There's pretty full implementation of that for CENTCOM Smalltalk. There's more algorithms than I can shake a stick at.
Let's see if I can pull up a list here. Because Blowfish is definitely there.
Yeah.
There's, there's the list. AES, ArcFish, ArcFor, Blowfish, DES, DH, DSA, MD5. This is all VisualWorks, of course.
Right, and I should mention that in DES, there's an implementation within there as part of protocol for triple DES as well.
Okay. PKCS 5 and 8, RSA, SHA, SSL, and X509 are all part of the security system. So, yes, we have all of those. Interestingly enough, I think most of those are implemented in Smalltalk, although as I understand it, there's been some experimentation to bind to an SSL library?
It's OpenSSL, is it? Yeah, OpenSSL, yeah. I think there's a binding to.
In Smalltalk, do my programs compile into regular executables or DLLs?
And ultimately, yes. That's a sort of a funny answer. Smalltalk uses dynamic compilation. So when you say save in Smalltalk, it saves your method as bytecodes. When you run those bytecodes, it dynamically compiles them into native code at that time. You don't get a native exe that, like you would with a C program, but that doesn't mean that you can't ship your application all in one file. So, for instance, on Windows and now on Linux and Solaris, you can embed the image right into the executable. So your executable contains the virtual machine plus the image and gives the impression to people that you're running one single program.
Right, and on the Mac, it's less of a problem to have multiple files because normally on a Mac you'd have that app bundle thing anyway. So you put the virtual machine and the image into the appropriate place in the application bundle, and from something like the Finder, it just looks like one file. You know, it looks like a Mac application.
To answer the second part of Michael's question, can Smalltalk act as a DLL? Historically, no, but recently I have done some work that allows Smalltalk to be called as a DLL.
See, now you were supposed to say recently yes, so that I could say, and Dave, could you tell us who did that?
Yeah. So I think we talked about that before, though.
Yeah.
So now you can take a Smalltalk application, combine the image with with the VM and package it as a DLL, and then call that from other C programs or whatever else might call standard DLLs. And again, that works on Windows, Linux, and Solaris. On Windows and Solaris, you're talking about shared object libraries.
Does Smalltalk have constants or immutables or something like that?
Yes, Smalltalk has immutable objects. In fact, you can take any object and tell it that it is now immutable, and if you try to change it, it'll give you an exception. Now, by default, any strings that you enter as literals or anything you enter as literals would be immutable. So if you have a string and you want to change that string, you'll have to send it a copy message and change the copy, or tell it to become not immutable anymore, which is a little bit dangerous to do. It's probably better to change the copy.
Generally better to get a copy, yes.
So Smalltalk has exceptions?
Smalltalk has exceptions. There's a actually fairly nice exception handling mechanism. One interesting difference between Smalltalk's exceptions and those in Java and C# is that when you handle an exception in Smalltalk, you don't immediately do the unwind back to the handler. You run the handler as if it was called from the code that raised the exception. So basically, you push another stack frame, go into that method, and now you're running the handler. The handler now has the option to say, oh, this is really okay, just continue from where you left off. Or instead of producing an error, just use this value instead and continue on. And you don't have that option from Java or C#.
Right. By then, your stack is all unwound.
That's right. So it's actually better exception handling than you get in those two mainstream languages.
Does Smalltalk have comprehensive date, time zone, calendar sort of classes and libraries?
They have built-in date and time classes, and there's a timestamp class as well. And for anything that the built-in ones don't handle, which is an awful lot, I mean, the built-in ones can tell you how many days are in each month and what years are leap years and things like that. But for anything not handled by that, there's an enormous class library called Kronos, which gives you everything you could ever imagine to do with times. It does it really, really well. So Kronos can give you different Julian and Gregorian and other different kinds of calendars and It does a really nice job handling dates and times. So if you're doing serious work with dates and times, you might want to look at Kronos.
Does Smalltalk have a bunch of transfer libraries like HTTP, FTP, BitTorrent, SCP, that sort of stuff?
Well, okay. Normal is probably the wrong word. The standard ones like HTTP and FTP and that kind of thing. Yeah, it has all of that. Some of the other ones like BitTorrent, no, we don't have implementations there. But for various things, people write libraries. I'm sure somebody's done a BitTorrent, but I'm not aware of one.
Does Smalltalk have an XML parser?
Yes. The XML parser was modified by Bottom Feeder to work better with Bottom Feeder. do you want to talk about that one?
I've got my own advertising section now.
Yeah.
Well, actually, there's kind of a funny story behind that, too, is not so much the Bottom Feeder aspect of it exactly, but, you know, with parsing XML, Atom, or RSS things, it's less of a problem now because most of the things out there you'll find are handled by FeedBurner or some of these other standard libraries, so they all tend to be standard parsable XML. But back in the early days, there was an awful lot of bad XML out there, and I would tell people that I had an XML parser for Bottom Feeder that could just deal with the crap that came at me, and they'd say, oh, well, it's because you've written yourself a TagSoup regex parser, and I tell them, well, no, it's because I subclass the stupid thing, and when I find errors, I just tell the system, make like that didn't happen and move along. And the reason that surprised so many people is that if you look at the XML parser in Java, or if you look at the main ones in Java, I should say, there's more than one. If you look at the standard one in C#, certainly in the .NET framework, and the main ones used in Java, they tend to be declared final. The idea being that, well, the library designer is effectively God. He knows everything you'd ever want to know about XML, so don't ever dare gainsay anything he did. And it's one of the cool things about Smalltalk is that there's never a case where you get a library where you can't just go in and screw around with it, either by directly overriding stuff in the library or, more safely, subclassing and extending.
Does Smalltalk have a debugger?
That's one of its most beautiful features. And the debugger in VisualWorks these days is one that used to be called the PDP debugger. Smalltalk always had a debugger, but the PDP debugger was a much better one implemented by Terry Raymond, and is now part of the product. The funny thing is there has been a debate lately about whether people should be using debuggers for software development.
By people who are used to bad debuggers, yes.
And the funny thing is that we look at the debugger not as something that finds bugs, but as something that helps us see the program execution.
Right. Well, I'll give my standard explanation of the difference between debugging in Smalltalk and debugging in almost any other language I'm familiar with. And that is that if you're working in most languages, when you debug, the best you can describe yourself as is a forensic pathologist. The patient is dead, and all you can do is figure out which of the multiple stab wounds in his back killed him. In Smalltalk, on the other hand, you're a surgeon. The patient isn't dead. He's knocked out on the table, and you're there with your scalpel trying to piece him back together and send him on his merry way. And that's because you've got full context, and as you said, with exception handling, you can decide to rewind the stack and put things back to the way they were a few minutes ago. You don't have to, you know, figure that everything's just stopped dead and all you've got is a snapshot of the way things were. You've actually got things the way they were. And I actually just learned something very interesting about the debugger just this last week. There were two things that came up. One, Michael gave me a suggestion for a screencast about how you could add breakpoints programmatically. And I asked Terry Raymond about that, and he sent me a one method extension to the debugger that lets you programmatically insert breakpoints, you know, just by code instead of by menu. And then there's another piece that has been there for a long time, but I wasn't aware of, is that you can save libraries of breakpoints, so, or probes. So if you have an application that you are debugging and you periodically debug the same set of methods because, you know, you maybe tested against various kinds of data inputs, and it's nice to be able to put the breakpoints back in the same place and then remove them all, you can save the location of all those breakpoints out in a file. and then load them all back in instead of having to go painstakingly in and put them all in by hand.
Yeah, that's a feature I've never used, but I'm looking forward to trying it.
I didn't even know it was there.
Does Smalltalk have unit tests?
Smalltalk invented unit tests.
My comment. The very first unit testing framework was SUnit, which was written for Smalltalk. It turns out that the Java version, known as JUnit, was a rewrite based on the Smalltalk version.
Right, but hasn't JUnit been rewritten about 5 gazillion times now?
Oh, quite possibly. And I know that Eclipse has its own different version of JUnit than the standard one because they needed to integrate it more closely into the Eclipse environment.
Yep. Everybody likes to reinvent wheels.
So the very first XUnit system was SUnit for Smalltalk.
Okay, does Smalltalk have, like, widgets for GUI programming?
Yes. And actually, depending on which Smalltalk, the widgets are either emulated, meaning that they're cross-platform and not dependent on the host operating system like VisualWorks and like Squeak, or they are native widgets, meaning that they are, you know, hooked down to the platform like they are in Object Studio, or Visual Age, or the old Digidoc product, or Dolphin. So you can get pretty much exactly what you want and exactly what you need depending on which Smalltalk implementation you want to pick up. You can get seamless cross-platformness if you want to work with VisualWorks or Squeak, or you can get complete full-bore native stuff if you want to work something like Object Studio or Dolphin.
Is there a UI builder then?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's a UI builder called UI Painter, actually.
It was an original name.
Yeah, original name.
And you could actually go back probably about 10, 15 podcasts to our talk with Stephen Travis Pope because he gave a fairly decent background on where that all came from.
And it's a pretty decent painter. I would like to see some things changed on it, but it's not too bad.
Can you make non-GUI programs then in Smalltalk?
We do it all the time. You don't have to have a GUI. You can create headless programs that you can then run as services within Windows or background processes on Unix.
So I can make a Windows service?
You can make...
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. You can make a Windows service, and on Unix or Linux, you can run, you know, things like web application servers. If you go to syncomsmalltalk.com, the page that comes up was served to you by a headless Smalltalk image.
And you can also create Smalltalk images. Now, it's a little bit harder to do this than perhaps it should be, but you can create a Smalltalk image that will read standard in and write standard out and work as in a command line environment.
Actually, it's a lot easier now than it used to be. At this point, to get something that does that, you just have to send the right command line arguments to the image when you start up, unless you're on Windows. If you're on Windows, it's more complicated because you have to start a different VM, and the reason for that is that normally you don't want the console open when you run a Windows app, so the VM normally doesn't keep the console open.
Yeah, I think there's a VM called VW Console.
Right, and that's there for cases where you would want it open, but by default on Windows, you normally don't want the console open.
Can I get the VM source so that nothing's hidden from me?
If you are a commercial customer, it comes, you can get it. Well, actually, you don't have to even ask for it. It comes on the CD. If you are an academic customer, you can get it on request. But, you know, it's normally it goes to academic customers on request, and it goes to commercial customers by default.
That's just VisualWorks, or what about the other Smalltalks?
Well, for VisualWorks and Object Studio from Syncom, they both come. Squeak is open source, so you get everything. Actually, Squeak's kind of an interesting story, because in Squeak, most VM work is done in the subset. The name is David Slang, right?
Yeah.
And that's a subset. You write Smalltalk code that gets compiled down to C for you. So a lot of VM development for Squeak is actually done in a Smalltalk subset. And of course, since Squeak is open source, you have access to everything. Likewise, if you were working in GNU, you have access to everything because that's under GPL. So you have both the pros and the cons of the GPL working for and against you. And I'm not going to get into a debate over that on this podcast, but in any case, it does mean you have access to everything.
I should point out that for Visual Age Smalltalk, which is the other... another popular dialects of Smalltalk, you don't get access to the VM source code. I do find, though, that Instantiations is quite responsive with problem reports, and they'll quite quickly send you back a response. So they're quite good for support.
So in Smalltalk, I then version off my code with SVN or Git or Bazaar or things like that?
Usually not. We do have version control, but you tend not to use the standard version control systems because they're file-based. Smalltalk has a much finer granularity of a programming model, so we tend to think in terms of changing individual methods. Methods roll into classes, classes roll into packages. So VisualWorks has its own version control system that it ships with called Store, which uses a relational database as a backend. And that's all completely integrated in with the product. So the default for the vast majority of companies using VisualWorks is to use Store as the source code repository.
Does Smalltalk have database drivers?
Lots. Let's see here. Can we get a list? I see DB2, I see ODBC, Oracle, Postgres, Omnibase. Yes. Funny, I don't see Sybase here, but Sybase is, I'm sure there
Sybase
was.
Sybase is one of the ones. Sybase is supported. It's just, it's
not
less,
in the list.
Yeah. It's a less popular one than it used to be, but it's there.
So there are lots of different relational database drivers. On top of that, there's a database, relational database to object mapping system called GLORP, which is a cross Smalltalk open source project. And that does a really nice job at mapping objects, Smalltalk objects, to relational databases. It was based on ideas from TopLink for Smalltalk, which later became TopLink for Java, and then was purchased by ultimately by Oracle. But I think GLORP does things that Smalltalk, TopLink for Smalltalk, never actually did. So it's a very nice little mechanism.
Yeah, and also should be mentioned, if you're talking about databases, that there's a an object database that is commercial class and very well respected called Gemstone, that the major commercial Smalltalks like Syncom Smalltalk and VisualAge all talk to.
And speaking of talking to, we're going to get a talking to from Gemstone at the Otto Carlson Smalltalk Users Group by James Foster coming up next week. And there's going to be a talk in Toronto and another talk in New York. So he's making the circuit.
And unlike most of the podcasts where we've done this kind of announcement, this is actually in the future, even when you're listening to this.
That'll be cool.
So if you go to either Dave Buck's blog or, you know, for the Ottawa and Toronto talks, Dave's got that announced on his blog. And if you go to Charles Montero's blog, he's got that, the New York City one, listed on his blog. And you can find all of that by going to my blog, syncomsmalltalk.com/blog. Hit the thing in the upper left-hand corner to get to the all the other blogs.
And I should point out, it might be in the future, it might be in the past, if you break this up into two episodes, because we're at, we're over 50 minutes now. So,
I guess in that case, it will be in the past. So, so we're back to the same, okay, so just ignore everything I just said. I had no idea what I was talking about.
Okay, we'll have to see what we can work out here. Maybe you can take that section and edit it to put it at the beginning.
I'm going to blame Michael because he's the time traveler.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, okay. Can I send emails from Smalltalk?
Yes. There's an SMTP library for sending, and then there are interfaces for IMAP and POP as well.
Is there a way to do logging in Smalltalk?
There's always a way to write to files. Logging.
Well, the web toolkit, I should mention this, has a basic logging framework that ships with it, and it produces log files that are not quite, not really exactly like Apache ones, but it's similar. So there are various logging frameworks that have been done for Smalltalk. Actually, didn't Joseph Pellerin do something he called Toothpick? I want to, you know, a couple of years ago that was in that direction.
Yeah, so there's no way to write to the OS logs?
You could make a C interface to them, but there's no default way that there's... I don't know of libraries that do that.
Okay. Is there a distributed objects library in Smalltalk?
More than one. Depends on which one you want. You can do Corba if you're feeling in a particularly 90-ish kind of frame of mind. You can do web services if you're feeling soapy. And then Syncom Smalltalk has its own framework called OpenTalk, which will do very good Smalltalk to Smalltalk kind of connectivity, and also is the basis of our web services connectivity. And, you know, all the other Smalltalks have things similar too. I mean, certainly the Visual Age implementation has both web services and Corba.
Yes.
And they have their own, what is the one called in Visual Age? Is it just distributed objects or something like that?
I'm not terribly familiar with that one.
Yeah, there's a Smalltalk specific one in that implementation too.
Is there a compression library in Smalltalk?
Yes, Syncom Smalltalk has support for certainly we do gzip and zip.
So onto the enterprisey stack, is there like XML schema and SOAP and web services and WS security and all that kind of stuff?
I think the best one to talk about that would be Michael.
Yeah, but he's not here right now.
No, we've got to get that guy with the weird voice back. We do web services. We do Corba, and, you know, like I just mentioned. On the web services side, we don't have WS security implemented, but we do have most of the rest of the stack.
Does Smalltalk have a curses interface?
Oh, God, no.
Well, there was a short speed into the point.
Not that I have an opinion on the matter or anything, no.
So it's a pretty funny response, actually. Can you do 2D drawing in Smalltalk?
Definitely. In fact, there's a program that I wrote up that's you can launch from Bottom Feeder called Spider Solitaire, which is a full solitaire program. You can drag cards around and drag stacks, and it's a pretty decent solitaire game.
So I can do scalar vector graphics and stuff like that?
With a bit of work. All the primitives are there to do the scalar vector graphics. It's just doing it at a higher level is a bit hard. There is an interface to Cairo, which is becoming quite popular to get
Cairo graphics?
Nice graphics, Cairo graphics.
Yep. And there's also an interface, although this is not exactly 2D all the way, there's an interface to OpenGL as well. Actually, there are two interfaces to OpenGL.
And there's also another package called, one called HotDraw and one called GFST, which are graphical frameworks that you can use to build your own graphical applications. So those are some other options.
Cool. Okay. So that covers off 3D as well, right? What about audio?
That was a challenging one.
People have done that. People have done audio interfaces, but it's not a standard part of the library.
I have, for Elastolab, I have done an audio interface very limited, so that I can play multiple sounds at the same time on Windows by going to, what's the library called? Direct Audio or Direct 3D? DirectX.
DirectX.
DirectX. And so I can play multiple sounds at the same time. There is support in Smalltalk for playing very, very simple sounds in VisualWorks, but to do something more elaborate, you have to go to some sort of C interface and interface to the underlying OS to do it.
Right, and that has been done by various people. I mean, certainly, I know Andre Schnoor, for instance, has done some of that on the Mac.
And Stephen Travis Pope is writing music software in VisualWorks as well.
There's also OpenAL, which is a 3D sound library, and FmodEX, which is a very, very popular and well-known sound library that we have interfaces to.
Oh, nice to know that Michael's back.
No, he's gone again now.
Okay, other questions?
Okay, so can I get audio-visual codecs going, playing movies and stuff like that?
For Windows, there's a VLC interface, I know that.
Yeah, that's not something I've done a whole lot with. There is a COM interface, you can interface to COM. And through COM, you can play movies and such, but I haven't played around with it a whole lot myself.
Right, if you're talking about COM from Syncom Smalltalk, depending on which of the two products you're talking about, you can either drive a media player, or in the case of Object Studio, you can embed a media player.
Are there image libraries?
Image as in pictures.
Yeah.
There are libraries to read and write GIFs, JPEGs, PNG, I believe, yes.
BMP, bitmaps.
Yeah. Now, in terms of doing image manipulation on them, I don't believe there are libraries, not that I know of, that do that. There is a little bit of work in the public store repository that people have submitted to do some alpha blending on graphics.
Who submitted that?
Well, I did a little bit, but...
Well, Runar Jardal has done some as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, Runar did a much more elaborate package than I did. I did just a quick test. You don't get the sort of full Photoshop-style image effects. I haven't seen any libraries for it. Not to say that you can't write such a library, but if you were to do so, I would think it would be much more efficient to write it in C and then interface to it from Smalltalk.
Well, there's interfaces to Image Magic and Squeak.
Okay. Wasn't aware.
Does Smalltalk have a profiler?
Yes, quite a nice profiler, actually. It interrupts your program at regular intervals, pulls off the stack, and then continues on, and then gives you an analysis of where you spent most of your time. So that tool, if you use it nicely, it can really pinpoint where your code bottlenecks are.
So can Smalltalk play CIF4?
We must be reaching the end of the podcast.
Yeah, I got to the end of my very long list. I think James should actually, turn a lot of this into some various, advocacy pages, honestly, because I think a lot of these questions are pretty common for someone who's approaching Smalltalk.
Well, actually, the interesting thing is that I probably should turn them into advocacy pages, but also a lot of these questions can be answered through the various screencasts that I've done over the last almost 2 years. Many of these questions are answered rather directly in the Smalltalk Daily screencasts.
Or in many respects, sort of indirectly. If you were doing advocacy pages, then you'd be able to link off to those screencasts as a demonstration of how it's done.
Yep.
So, I mean, Smalltalk has a lot. I mean, I was going through Ruby, Python, IO, in a couple other languages, pages that talk about their features and libraries and core functionality and stuff, and kind of going off and seeing if this Smalltalk language can do all that stuff. And, there's only really one thing that we brought up there that didn't have an answer for, and that was, talking to OS loggers. Smalltalk's been around a while and does a lot of stuff.
And audio. Audio is another...
No. I think audio is fine. I mean, just... The FMODX and OpenAL are both very powerful. And then when you want to get into your own specific audio processing, there's all the work done by Stephen Travis Pope and the likes.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a very strong story there. It's just not very mainstream.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, there is a lot of stuff in there. It's quite amazing how much stuff there is. And there are various resources to get to it. Let's talk Syncom Smalltalk again. When you buy the CD-ROM, when you get the CD-ROM, there are contributed items in the CD-ROM that people have contributed. But on top of that, you have the public store repository where people will submit packages to do all sorts of different things. So if you browse around there, you can find all sorts of functionality that is held in that repository.
Yeah, another thing, too, is if in the upcoming release, and when you open the browser, you immediately get thrown into an overview down in the bottom where the code pane is that has a few URLs listed in it as places you should immediately go to get more information. And on the Object Studio 8 DVD, and it is a DVD now because we're shipping, Object Studio 8 is going out. It's not that it's huge, but on that DVD we're shipping every screencast that I've done from the point that I started to the point that the product ships. So when we ship Object Studio 8.1 in a few weeks, it'll have, what, a year and a half's worth of screencasts on it.
Does that apply to VisualWorks as well?
Well, if you get CINCOM Smalltalk, you get both the DVD and the CD.
Okay.
So if you slap in the OS 8 DVD, you will have access to all those screencasts. But of course, if you don't, if you just want to go online, if you have a decent connection, they're all online too. And that's at smalltalk-daily.cincomsmalltalk.com.
Okay. Well, I think we're done, aren't we?
I think that's pretty good.
That's a two-parter?
Yeah. Yeah. Good questions, by the way, Jay and Michael.
Yes, J. Michael.
J. Michael. J. Michael, yeah.
I didn't get an answer to the Civ 4 one, though. Can Smalltalk play Civ?
Well, I'm sure you could write up a client application for it. I'm sure you get banned from Civ.
Well, you could, you know, actually, while you probably couldn't drive all the graphics at this point, you could do something similar to what some people are doing with Python and Lisp in some games. You could certainly write some of the program logic in using Smalltalk.
Okay. Let me qualify. What do you mean by can it run Civ 4? Do you mean can it act as a client that shows all the graphics, or can it emulate a client and send the network messages but pretend, like, implement a bot or something?
Yeah, basically, I want to make a bot. I want all the, you know, the boring bits of the game to be done for me.
Boring bits.
He's been invited onto the Polycast, so he's just getting ready for some abuse.
Yes.
So I'm sure it would take considerable effort to do so, but it is possible.
And first you'd have to reverse engineer whatever the protocol they use is too, so
they've got the Python thing right there. You can just make that talk to Smalltalk.
Yeah, there you go.
So okay.
I think with that, we've reached the end of the podcast.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys.
About bottom feed of Smalltalk and Civ 4. That must be everything.
Hey, and I even slipped in Elastolab. There you go. Okay. Have a good night, guys.
Right, okay. Bye.
Bye.
Here's Dave Buck with this week's Cimbron Design Minute.
This is David Buck with today's Cimbron Design Minute. Many people ask me about software metric tools. These are static analysis tools that can look at your code and make comments about the structure and organization and style. These are available for C#, Java, Smalltalk, and for many other environments as well. My main concern about these tools is the question, are they always right all the time? Do they always give you recommendations that will improve your code quality? In my experience, this isn't the case. There are many situations where the tool makes a recommendation, but I, the designer, feel that that isn't the right direction for the code to go in. In that case, I'd like to be able to turn off that warning, especially in that one specific case. Many tools don't allow me to do this. The problem this leads to is a signal-to-noise ratio problem. There are so many warnings that I need to ignore that I miss the places where the tool is recommending a valuable improvement. So, it's hard to use code metrics tools as a regular part of your development process. I find occasionally to get some information about a new system they're useful, but it's hard to incorporate into a full design practice. This has been the Cimbron Design Minute. Cimbron offers training and consulting in object-oriented development and the Smalltalk programming language. For more information, visit www.cimbron.com or email info@cimbron.com.
Here's James Savage with this week's Smalltalk Jobs Report.
I'm James T. Savage, and this is the Smalltalk Jobs Report. Sydney, Australia. Hudson is looking for a Smalltalk analyst programmer for a position in the wealth management field. They are looking for experience in Smalltalk and other OO languages. Experience that is considered a plus includes Oracle, PLSQL, WebSphere, and TIBCO. In the United States, Atlanta, Georgia. Several companies are looking for a Gemstone DBA Smalltalk developer. These companies include Intercontinental Exchange, Precision System Design, Principal Solutions Group, K-Force Technology Staffing, and Chatham Staffing. They are looking for someone with Gemstone DBA experience, someone who is able to work in a team environment, has a Bachelor of Science degree in computer science and has experience with Smalltalk. VisualWorks experience is considered a plus. Tom Hart at Chatham Staffing emailed me with additional information. This position pays $100,000 to $130,000 per year with a 20% bonus. There is also relocation assistance. North America. Syncom is looking for a senior software engineer to work on the core areas of their VisualWorks and Object Studio products. They are looking for someone who has familiarity with the internals of the VisualWorks toolset and experience with store, version control, OO design, user interface design and implementation, and Smalltalk. Experience that is considered a plus includes relational databases and virtual machines. This is a North American work-from-home position. Washington, D.C. BCG Attorney Search is looking for an IP patent attorney who has experience with intellectual property procurement, prosecution, or enforcement, optics, and semiconductor manufacturing knowledge. Knowledge or experience with Smalltalk or other OO languages is considered a plus. These are just a few examples of the Smalltalk positions that are currently open across the world. For more details, visit my blog, Message Sends with an Undefined Object. Good luck with your job hunting.
Well, that about wraps up Industry Misinterpretations for this week. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have feedback on this or any other episode, please send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com or visit us on Facebook, where you can look at the Industry Misinterpretations group, look at the Smalltalkers group over on Ning, or you can visit the Industry Misinterpretations podcast on iTunes and leave a review, or head on over to Podcast Alley for our Industry Misinterpretations podcast listing there and cast a vote for the podcast. We'll be back next week with an interview with Randall Schwartz, which should prove to be quite interesting. He's recently become very involved in the Seaside and Squeak communities, and we're hoping to get him more involved in the Syncom Smalltalk community. In any case, in the meantime, have fun with Smalltalk.